I'm Henry Lin.
And I'm Brendan Metz.
And welcome to Better World. Better World is an exploration of badass people doing really cool things. The more we know about this world, the better we can do in changing it.
So let's get started.
Yeah, okay, I'll take that. Yeah, okay. Oh, hey guys. Barnett has left the country. Or he's moved apartments. It's really unclear. But today with us, we have none other than our rock star co-host and engineer, Brendan.
What's good, y'all?
Thanks for sitting in. We have a fascinating topic that we're looking at today that is centered around climate change and the education and media inherent to it. There is an entire industry, actually, that's popping up, a subsegment of film. There's Will Smith has got one. There's all sorts of Planet with, you know, that high cinematography. So with us today, we've got one of the most meaningful and impactful directors in the space, Jared Scott.
Thanks so much, Henry. No hyperbole there at all.
Earned, I say. Tell us a little bit about the movies that you've been working on. Because I was at the premiere of one and am going next week to the premiere of the other, it sounds like.
Yeah. So we're about a week away from the premiere, our New York City premiere of The Great Green Wall, which is the latest film I directed. The film follows Malian musician and activist Ina Moja as she travels along this burgeoning wall of trees called the Great Green Wall in the African Sahel. And the goal is to grow this wall of trees from west to east, 8,000 kilometers long, to fight back against desertification, increased resource scarcity, climate change, mass migration, all the different consequences of our changing climate.
And your film before that?
Yeah, similar kind of idea, but a radically different approach. Really, the previous film was called The Age of Consequences, which was out on Stars and is now on iTunes and Amazon. It's with PBS worldwide. But The Age of Consequences looks at climate change through the lens of national security.
Right. Interesting film and interesting take. You had interviewed a number of high-level government officials, former diplomats, five-star generals, as I recall. And the principle was that there is a domino effect which occurs due to climate change. You start with climate change, which leads to drought, which leads to famine. The famine inherently leads to mass migration, or in some case, civil unrest. And the perfect case study which you cited for this was Syria, which then gave rise to ISIS, destabilization of governments, and ultimately collapse. So the fundamental basis of the Age of Consequences is that there was a series of consequences that we weren't being mindful of, which happen as a direct result, socioeconomic, political, of climate change. Great Green Wall, I think, is a fascinating project to begin with. And just to review again, this is an African-wide project that I believe was sponsored by the UN, started in, 2007, was it? When?
Yeah, there's a number of partners in the African Union, the United Nations, the World Bank. But there's a number of organizational partners and then in partnering countries. It's sort of 11 countries that went to 13, and now there's over 20
13 countries planting trees to stop the Sahara from spreading.
Within the Sahel. And then there's over 20 countries, you know, now within sub-Saharan Africa that have Great Green Wall-inspired initiatives.
Amazing. And what do you think the key takeaway is from your current film about the Great Green Wall? Is it already happening? Does it need our support? Are there products that are being generated from it, or some type of commerce that's being generated from it? Or does it occur on a local level, just helping farmers and families to feed themselves and, you know, to create better livelihoods? What are some of those takeaways?
Sure. If I could just back up for a second.
Get
though.
In there.
I know. No, just because you mentioned the Age of Consequences and you discussed that, and then we went on to the the Great Green Wall. I think it might be important to just get a quick backstory on me and why I'm talking about these things. I mean, I've been making films about climate for a while. I made some films that were kind of targeted at the I guess the climate choir, those who, the active allies, as you call it in your spectrum of allies, those who you just needed to engage and make aware. And we did a film called Disruption and then Do the Math with Bill McKibben. Disruption was with a number of different luminaries following the big climate march back in 2014,
right,
ahead of the UN Climate Summit. And I think after working on these films that I was really proud of with how they were able to impact people that were already engaged in this issue was to figure out how can we tell climate stories? How can we get better at telling stories about our climate, which aren't always easy to tell?
Right.
And that led me to The Age of Consequences after I did a film on social inequality with Noam Chomsky, but did The Age of Consequences, which, you know, the idea was how do we find a unique angle? And
right,
that's why we found the looked at security, looked at national security specifically in the U.S. and then global stability and global security. And yeah, you mentioned the case study of Syria. There was the Arab Spring writ large. We looked at a few other case studies in that film, Darfur. And so I had looked at the Sahel for a while and wanted to go explore that. It just so happened when the Great Green Wall came about, this was a much more human-centric story, where The Age of Consequences,
right,
was kind of looking at it as a
global
survey,
crisis,
as an essay, really. And here we decided to go on the ground and shoot it deliberately handheld. We have a main protagonist, Inna, who's amazing. She's an activist. She's a musician. We decided to use music to try to make it more interesting, so it wasn't this dry,
desertified, you know, if you will.
Yeah, desertified story. You know, that was more, you know, because this could be, it's really a technical issue. The idea of, you know, solutions and development and,
yep,
and agroforestry and reforestation and all the community building that goes with that. It can be you've seen those videos, you've read those,
yes,
reports. And so we decided to try to make something artful and entertaining. So we came at, you know, we were able to take that leeway. I was able to kind of work with an amazing team and tell a story that was more cinematic. And so, you know, I mean, I think we don't get into, I mean, the solution is this, the wall, right? I mean,
it's planting trees.
Yes, but it's obviously a lot more than that. I mean,
the UN had identified, the UN scientists, that if we spend $300 billion on prevention of desertification and reintroducing nutrients back into the soil of some of the places that we trashed, either through monocropping, shit agriculture, whatever the case may be, we buy ourselves 20 some odd years, 15 to 20 years to, you know, get everything down to carbon neutral, to create more solutions on top of that. But it's instead of an 8-year clock, you know, tack on 15 years plus. So this couldn't be more timely and of course more important. And it appears also that the Great Green Wall is focused around some of not only the most problematic areas in the world, I believe the highest incidents of deforestation are occurring in Central Africa. I think I also read that in Bloomberg. But this is also focusing everyone back to one of the greatest carbon sequestration challenges and potential pitfalls, soil, peatlands. We take for granted how much carbon actually goes into the ground and is sequestered there. And I don't remember the exact statistic, but I know that when you desertify something, you fuck yourself twice over. You've released the carbon from the trees that were there previously, and then you've also released it from the soil. So, like, the carbon effect is like something like 626% times worse or something. I think I read that stat in the New York Times about what happens when desertification occurs in your Central American, Latin American, you know, sort of North South American jungles in that region. So, what struck me about your first film and first Age of Consequences was that if you don't actually effectively do something, there are horrible, horrible, horrible consequences. Real starvation on mass level. War actually occurs and has occurred in places like Syria. And then, you know, when I first started seeing the trailers at, you know, your Climate Week events, what further struck me was that there are people outside of the U.S. where we must have like the largest population of climate deniers on the planet. We're insane. But 13 countries coming together with real solutions to sequester that carbon. And I think the thing that I'm looking to hear a tremendous amount more of, not only in how you got here and what the process was for how you covered it, but what are some of the stories of each of these individuals? How did they take it upon themselves now that they recognize that this is such a problem because it's affected their lives? What are they doing even on a community level, which I think is going to be fascinating, and as well as this larger government 13 initiatives, you know, UN-sponsored level?
Sure, yeah. I think, you know, there's the inspiring story of frontline characters. And, you know, in the film, Indigoes and meets different people in different places. I mean, we met this this amazing farmer, community organizer in Ethiopia, who over the last 30 years, he witnessed the famine in the 1980s. And,
right.
And kind of, you know, through that hardship, he says, you know, hardship or vision comes from hardship is his line. And he said, you know, because I was able to think differently and kind of mobilize the community using different water and catchment techniques and the ability to store water, that was their big thing. Once they kind of got that down, and this is all like low cost, these are all low cost means of, right. of kind of dealing with this. I mean, the idea about regreening, and it's much more than just planting trees, but it is a low cost.
It's whole
solution.
Ecosystems, right?
It's a nature based solution. It's a low. And you're right. Yeah, you have to think holistically about the ecosystem, and then therefore you have to think holistically about the community and the community's well being.
Right.
And development has to be this holistic thing, and development begets development. If you're doing that, then other things are going to go right. I mean, if you have a flourishing regreening initiative, whether it's community gardens or revitalizing a forest or you know, some kind of agroforestry product or you know, harvesting baobab in Ghana, whatever it might be, that these are all things that don't happen in a vacuum. Development begets development. So that's what's exciting. I think that you're starting to see the Great Green Wall open, like really let more people into the tent, a lot of different ideas. I mean, originally it's kind of a metaphor, this idea of a wall too. I think it's important to note that this is not going to be a literal wall of trees that's being built. It's just that it's best visualized as this row of green stretching across the entire continent. And you know, once you realize that's really a patchwork, a mosaic of different regreening or different development initiatives that hope to bring prosperity to the region, that's the best way to understand what's really happening. You know, I think, you know, we met well, you all right, brother? You need some water? It's okay. Just let it out. Let it out. Abu Hawi.
We're going to be ready to edit that one out. Yeah.
Abu Hawi was our community leader and farmer in Ethiopia. Really, really inspiring. Who kind of brings the film home. And that at the top we meet Colonel Papasar in Senegal, who really planted the first trees back in 2007 when this initiative was kind of, you know, was ratified by the Pan-African Sahelian Initiative. So it's been, you know, and to be honest, I mean, the reason why we made this film, not many people know about it. It's not exactly flourishing. You know, I mean, it is, you know, arguably the numbers are 10 to 15%, depending on what you read, underway or.
Why
or,
is that?
I mean, it's a really ambitious initiative. The idea to develop and regreen on this mass scale.
Does it need foreign government support? Is there not enough money?
So yeah, there's the stories in the ground, and those are the inspirational stories on the front line that we covered in the film. Now, if I was to step back, we didn't cover this in the film. You get a little bit into the weeds, but yeah, there's it's housed in the African Union, but there are funding partners, there are larger organizational partners that are getting on board, and yeah, there's a lot of money that has to come from the outside to invest in the wall.
So it sounds like this is the kind of thing that a freshman Democratic congresswoman out of the state of Arizona should get behind, and there should be an allocation of money, particularly from our government, that supports initiatives like this, as well as basically someone's going to have to pay that $300 billion bill for combating to get us the 15, 20 years. But combating desertification and support initiatives like this. I mean, it sounds like there's already an existing infrastructure that's on the ground and they just need more support financially. Is that the case?
Yeah, it's quite difficult. I mean, there's, you know, I think what you, and this is a little bit out of my pay grade, but I think what we realized is a lot of these areas are, when you talk about the Sahel, like just south of the Sahara, you have to realize the Sahel means shore
right.
in Arabic. It is, it's this kind of transition zone between the northern Sahara and then the more humid forested areas mm-hmm. further south. And in some of these places, there's this idea to revitalize the land, but it wasn't as if this was an Amazon or, you know, some
right.
kind of large forest, you know, that you might be thinking of before. You know, oftentimes...
But it was still very substantive soil, which had a really positive effect in carbon sequestration. Nutrient rich, right?
Yeah, and in some places, I mean, it was more verdant than others, but you're right. I mean, the thing is, with overgrazing, with misuse of farmland, you know, when you do deforest what there is there, you start to have soil erosion. You know, you lose the topsoil. The rain will also wash away the nutrients. You know, the rainfall variability is now all over the map today. But, you know, you do get rain. It just, you know, you either have no rain or it's neither no water or there's too much, right?
Right.
And then that can also wipe away what's left. And so, yeah, you start to have this process and you have the desert winds. And this is kind of this desertification process. It's really a man-made problem. I mean,
right.
you know, there's it's a term I think that originated in the 1950s, but it's kind of an amalgam of all these different things. And as you rightfully point out, I think the key thing is the soil becomes degraded, right?
Yes.
I think the problem that we have now across the Sahel is, I think according to the FAO, about 3/4 of the land is now severely degraded.
Right.
And that's a problem when you have 80-90%
Where is
of
the
people,
Sahel? For our listeners.
Yeah, so the Sahel is just south of the Sahara and then, you know, north of the more humid forested areas.
Stretching
so
across the entire
Sahara. Stretching across, yeah. So you have, you know, from Senegal all the way to Djibouti, you have the Sahel region.
From Senegal all the way to Djibouti. That's a really, really great plug. On that note, we are going to take our first commercial break. The Smile Radio, from Senegal all the way to Djibouti. The best radio out there. Thanks to thesmileradio.fm for sponsoring us, and thanks to Shinola Detroit for sponsoring Smile Radio. Check us out on the Instagrams at smileradio.fm.
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 Also, shout out to the Freehand Hotel for hosting us.
Shout out to the Freehand Hotel.
Beautiful, you know, location.
Gorgeous location.
Takes up like two city blocks.
No. If you are interested in learning more about Smile Radio, please come by 24th and Lexington, Freehand Hotel. Check out the studio. It is available for rent. Hit us up. DM us. SmileRadio.fm. And we're back. Brandon, that was one of the best commercials we've ever done.
I think so.
I mean, you've heard them all, man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, I know all of them.
We're here with Jared Scott, director, and we are talking Great Green Wall, desertification, and the fact that he was just recently married to the most beautiful woman on the planet, Shout out to Cap.
Yep. We didn't mention that.
Well, we did now.
Now we did, yeah.
The cat's out of the bag. I got news. It's not going back in. Tell us a little bit. You had some interesting facts for us, or tell us a little bit about our 13 countries and some of the progress that they have made and some of the, you know, stopping points. I'd love to get back into more of what they need and how the ball moves forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a tough one because I think that, you know, there's so many things that we have to do. I mean, I think this is just one of a penumbra of things that we have to do to solve the global climate crisis, right?
Right.
I think the important thing is to, I think, empower people on the ground. I mean, all of frontline communities around the world, I mean, they're all often the ones that are protecting a lot of these lands. They have the ability to provide low-cost solutions, to be a part of that solution. So I think that any way we can empower them, if that's financial, if that's through policy, whatever that might be, I think also awareness. I mean, not to, you know, I mean, people just have to know about these things. I mean, the reason why we made this film is just so people would know about it. You know, the more that people know about it, the more that people will want to see this happen.
It's been around since 2007. I did not know about it until you drew my attention to it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, its roots kind of go back to, I mean, there's been like a few iterations throughout the years, this idea. I mean, there's been inspiration from other movements. There's the Green Belt movement in Kenya. Which was fascinating. There was the Algerian Green Dam. There was actually a green belt around Niamey. There's been like a history of trying to regreen areas of the Sahel. And I think that, right, you know, some people say if all the trees that would have that had been planted over the years would have actually matured and grown and thrived, you know, it would look like the Amazon. I mean, that this idea that there's been a lot of efforts to kind of plant and regreen. I think what people have been missing sometimes in the past is coming in and saying, hey, here's what you should do, right?
Right.
And we know what works best is if you empower local people. So one of the big things is farmer managed natural regeneration, FMNR.
Okay.
And this is really big in Niger. There's some great success stories in Meridi and in Zinder about this, you know, planting, you know, creating these demi-luna holes where it also catches water, and you use the seed memory of the soil mixed with manure to kind of just to revive the soil. I mean, this is one of these things that, you know, you can look at what people have been doing for years and years. Now, there are a lot of farmers in this region. There are, you know, 80 to 90% again live on some form of agriculture. And so empowering those farmers is really important. But you also have a lot of other different people that don't always farm. Like the Fulani are often herders in the area, more nomadic in certain places. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, asking, you know, maybe a Fulani herder in the north of Mali to tend to agroforestry might not always, you know, if there's an initiative there to help kind of, you know, provide for the community, I think you can build that. But that isn't a thing that's always happened historically.
Right.
And so I think the best bet is to embrace local knowledge, embrace local people. And then where that's difficult, where some places where you're dealing with not just trying to reforest or you know, forest, but, you know, with the afforestation is always an issue. Places that didn't have anything really before, so there's going to be some challenges. There's going to be some hurdles, and a lot of these places they're not exactly densely populated. They're not like the capital cities. You know, you get into places where it's harder to have a large group of people. So I think it's going to take a number of different initiatives in a number of different forms. Like there's, you know, like I said, I mentioned there's the Zai holes that are thriving in Niger. There's the more classic acacia tree growing up in the north of Senegal.
Right.
There's, sorry. Uh-oh. It's okay. Uh-oh. Henry's, no, it's that time of year. There's, it's, we all have, there's the, there it is. Allergies.
Flu season's coming.
Oh, all right. Hang on. He's gonna have to refill his water.
we can cut this out, right?
No, no.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you want to keep all this in there?
Yeah.
Oh God.
Well, we can. I mean,
I don't.
I guess in that case, I love what you were saying about really empowering local people, because. I mean, obviously, Africa is an area of the world that has been historically very kind of taken advantage of. And, you know, people just kind of move in with lots of money and try and solve problems and sort of end up making them worse. Is there support for these green wall movements from those local farmers who are kind of directly impacted by this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, from the places that we visited, yeah, there are... You know, there's a history of, I think you have to, like with any development, you have to go in, you have to listen to people. You can't just come in and tell them what to do. You have to, again, empower people. I know that development's hard. I haven't been on the ground, like, you know, in the thick of it as a lot of people have that can speak more thoughtfully to that. But, but I think at some point you have to meet people on their own terms and, you know, try not dictate from above, because I mean anything that you establish in an area that involves some form of development, you have to have some kind of presence there, and you have to train people, and people have to be able to kind of you know, be self-sufficient in that. And you know, I don't know. I think in the areas that I saw, there was, you know, the local people were the ones that were planting. They were the ones that were being paid to plant, you know, they were getting their hands dirty, and living in these communities where these trees were thriving. And the idea there is too that ultimately that they benefit the community. You have to find things that people don't want to chop down, things that, you know, don't turn to firewood, but can benefit the ecosystem at large. But also, you know, you can get a special gum from the acacia gum arabic, right? You know, you can get, there's certain things that you want to be able to provide. You want to, you know, it's also about making sure that livelihoods are restored. That's a big thing, is to improve livelihoods. And if you're not doing that,
right, most, you know, of these lands were destroyed in the name of somebody having a livelihood to raise cattle or whatever the case may be, right? So it sounds like...
That nod was a yes.
Yeah, right. No,
you can't see the nod.
You can't see that at home, that. People. Or his stunning good looks. It sounds...
He's got great hair.
He's got great...
Great hair.
Guy's got great hair.
I'm very jealous. Hey,
thanks.
I like your hair, too. Let's call a spade a spade here. I've got a quick question, which we will get to right when we're back. We have to do one last commercial break. This is going out to our friends at Terra Cafe. Terra Cafe is the zero waste coffee machine of the future. Terra Cafe, TerraKaffe. Check them out on Instagram and check them out at terracafe.com. You will be able to grind your own beans and have your place smell like a beautiful cafe in the south of France. Good news, you will also be able to get a subscription to coffee beans from Better World, grown in the jungle in agroforestry. That's right. Every time you buy a bag of those beans, somebody's planting a tree somewhere in Central America. Actually, you can chart that too. There's a pretty cool app. Terra Cafe, terracafe.com. Check them out. And we are back. We were talking about your great hair.
Why aren't we talking about your great hair?
That's a good question. Blind Barber, shout out to those guys too.
There's just great hair in this room.
It's
right
a
now.
Lot of great
I
hair.
I wish
hair
y'all could
room.
See it.
It's a good hair room.
Is this getting too didactic? I should. No, I feel like
by,
whenever I talk,
no
it's,
means.
You know,
okay. Like you're really getting into the meat and potatoes
I
of it.
I don't know if I should be talking about hair or. Empowering
no, you're going the right trade. You're going okay. The right way. So the species that you guys are choosing, also all important. I have a very basic question. What are the initiatives that are retraining these people who are, you know, sort of on the front lines? I'm really interested in understanding how this goes from policy and actually trickles down to the individual communities. Can you tell us a little bit about the steps in the process that you discovered?
You know what? I honestly, you know, not to completely dodge that, but I think that's something, you know, for our strategic partners, for the UNCCD, for the World Bank, for the African Union, and a whole host of others. I mean, I think that...
So there's a lot of these partners who are actually attacking this and taking this to the grassroots.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole apparatus that, you know, is looking at this as, you know, this also touches upon, I think, 15 of the 18, are they 18 SDGs or 17? I always forget. This touches upon...
SDG?
SDG. Wait, did I say that? Yeah. SDG.
SDG.
Jeez, okay. The Sustainable Development Goals. And this touches upon... whatever, you know, all but two of them. And so I think, you know, as you see in that UN world universe, that this is one of those initiatives, and it was talked about a lot.
17 UN sustainable goals.
17. Yeah.
Are centered around
development.
Restoring
goals, yeah. You know, yeah, you just
restoring
you,
ecosystems.
Yeah, yeah.
Improving lives socioeconomically, as well as improving planet, climate, ecosystems. Basically, how do you fix the fucking planet in 17 easy goals?
Exactly. Yeah. And so this is one of those initiatives that touches across, you know, 15 of those. So, I mean, there's a whole apparatus behind it. I think, you know, what I was trying to do is go out and just tell a compelling story about the excitement of it and talk about the ambition. Because I think one thing to note is that this is radically, radically ambitious, right? Just like getting to 2 degrees Celsius is ambitious. It's necessary. You know, we don't say, hey, you know what? we only have a X percent chance. I mean, some people say 67 if they're being optimistic, but it's more like 5%, right? 5% chance, if we're lucky, to get to maintain that 2 degrees warming, right?
Right.
That kind of red line of you know, tipping over into cataclysmic disaster.
Right.
We're not on track to do that. That doesn't mean we don't look at the emissions. If the emissions gap now, if we're on track for a 6 degrees warming world or a 4 degrees, we don't say, well, you know what? We should loosen the target, right? We should loosen our ambition. The ambition needs to be greater than that. The ambition needs to be 1.5. Although we're not on track for that. Not even close.
You're also touching on the point that this is a holistic approach.
Yeah, but I mean, I mentioned the 2 degrees because, like, we have to ramp up our ambition, even when it doesn't seem politically possible, even when it doesn't seem like we are on the right track. You still have to maintain the ambition because that's what we need to do. Whether we're doing that or not is another question, but that's what we need to do.
I pulled up the SDGs just to give a little context and insight, yeah. But these things are talking about no poverty, zero hunger, good health and well-being, quality education for everybody, gender equality, and addressing, of course, gender inequality, and then clean energy, clean water. It seems to me like the systemic change that you're attempting to put into place with the Great Green Wall is just the tip of the iceberg, and your aforementioned note to the fact that we have to be incredibly aggressive with and overreaching with some of these goals is completely correct and noted. I'm very, very, very interested, however, in not even however, how do we get to the point where all of these goals, and whether or not you have your 2 degrees or whether or not you have your 17, are being addressed with these actions? Because you would initially said, you know, only 10% of this was implemented. Not all of it, not all of the things were being done and being touched on. And with so many things that have to be fixed, how do we get there? I understand there's no silver bullet, and I understand that even, you know, our government releasing a $300 billion to try and put a fix, no silver bullet there. So us lobbying from a policy side and attempting to get politicians to pay attention, of course, is just one solution and start. But really, if you had the magic wand that you could wave to fix this, you know, what exactly would be that big overarching solution? You have to produce $1 trillion, like, but
well, I mean, when it comes to, well, I mean, I think if you're just saying there is no silver bullet, right? Actually, you know, I think we should pivot to, because it starts to get kind of woolly and messy for me. Like, I go, you know, what I'm going to pivot.
Right. How are you fixing poverty, clean water, and all the
rest? Well,
yeah.
Right? Well, I think, well, what, you know, I mean, well, all these SDGs, I think, are incredibly important. I mean, these are greater social justice goals. This is right. The idea of transitioning to a more just and sustainable world. All that's good. And I think development writ large, and there's a lot of co-benefits. There's a lot of overlapping, initiatives here. And again, like, the Great Green Wall touches upon a lot of these. So it's a great.
It feels like it does. It feels like there's a tie-in for a lot of them.
It's something to get excited about.
Right.
It's not, I mean, it's something to kind of root for. I mean,
I'm not just solving climate change. I'm solving social impact problems.
And you know, but to think about this idea of kind of a unification, something that brings people together
right.
and provides development across the continent, like to think of it in this massive, ambitious scale,
right.
It's incredible. Now, I mentioned the 2 degrees warming just because it's, again, the, you know, we have to ramp up our ambition. I think ambition's important, even if we're scattered and we don't quite know how to get there, right? And I think the same thing with this wall, like, you know, that we're far from this goal. I mean, we are far from it. That's why we made this film. That's why we want people to make, you know, to be aware of it. But the ambition needs to happen because, you know, we know that planting 1 trillion trees, you know, across the globe or more, you know, is such a low cost, you know, no brainer when it comes to trying to solve the crisis. Now, you're right. It's a silver bullet. I think, you know, what I wanted to pivot to is, you know, when I can't make sense of all this mess, I've been reading this book by Jonathan Safran Foer. I don't know if it's called We Are the Weather. I don't know if I'm saying his last name right. He wrote Eating Animals. Mm-hmm. But I'm just, you know, in this part where people are trying to figure out what they're going to do, he's like, just stop eating meat. Because you have to realize that, you know, I think that the FAO says about 14% of global emissions comes from animal agriculture. If you look at...
Yes, either from the development of their feed Or the animals themselves.
Yeah, but if you look at, there was another group that said, well, yeah, but they're not counting, the carbon that tree can no longer sequester,
right?
And some other things. And actually, if you look at the true carbon footprint, because nitrous oxide and methane that comes from animal agriculture is much more potent in the near term.
Oh yeah.
86%, I think, more potent than CO2 in the first 20 years. I think, 23 or something like that, and over a century. But it's up to about 50%. So it's more than all the cars, all the buildings.
Everything.
And none of these things matter when we do them. I mean, they matter on some level when you do them individually, but the whole idea is when we all do them, that becomes collective.
That's the thing,
collective,
right?
Action, right? When we all do something, it's collective action, and when we all don't do something, it's collective inaction. And the idea that we can start there and know that, depending on how you want to count it, 14% or 50% of our global emission budget, we can all choose not to partake in the animal, in animal agriculture.
You don't even have to go none. Go half. Well, look what happens when you go half.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think what he points out, which is great, is that you don't just have to become, it's not that everyone has to, become a vegan, but even if all of us ate half as much meat, right, in the U.S., let's say, it'd be the same impact. If you either have, half the people vegan or all of the people eating half as much, I guess it more or less nets out the same.
Right.
Anyway, why I mention this, I'm coming back to it, and why it relates to the Great Green Wall, is if you think about what's going on in the Amazon, I think 90% of the Amazon is basically in jeopardy because of animal agriculture.
It's ranchers. It's
people. So whether you're cutting these forests down to graze or cutting them down to produce feed, at the end of the day, like you think, like you have to make that connection and realize that, oh my God, when I eat this, that is, that is contributing to the destruction of this. And the best thing that we have are these, as we scramble to plant a trillion trees, if we turn around and we deforest the same amount, then we haven't netted out,
net neutral.
And that's the problem. We have to look at this holistically. I mean, the problem when we went to Nigeria and and someone was saying, hey, we're going to plant 5 million hectares here, but over the last 20 years, they've deforested 20 million hectares. That's not adding up. Or in Senegal, if they start to plant this they tap into those offshore oil, oil fields that are just being about ready to be tapped. And there's, that's a whole other argument. But you have to think about everything holistically. But one thing that's really interesting about animal agriculture is how it connects to deforestation on a global level. And that's something that's maybe a little more, hits more home for people here, that we can have more.
So you're a big
there.
Proponent of regenerative farming, which I assume is also a huge part of the Great Green Wall and, what they're doing in Africa. Do you think that there are some basic steps, because I'm seeing them and unpacking them, that we can ask our listeners to take here? I would like to encourage the listeners, of course, Great Green Wall and Age of Consequences, please look them up and check them out. You can find them each where?
Well, the Great Green Wall is yet to be released here in the States. We just
premiere had
our world
Thursday.
Premiere in Venice. Yeah, it's going to be at Dock NYC on Thursday, November 14th. So just keep your eye out for where you might be able to see it otherwise. But I encourage everyone to go see it in the theater because it is one of those films that looks and feels better on the big screen.
Age of Consequences, PBS?
It's PBS International. So yeah, globally you can see that through the different outlets that they sell to. But you can rent these on iTunes and Amazon as well.
Okay, yeah. Let's check them out in iTunes, people. So number one,
yeah,
let's take a look and get educated and have a fun night in of Netflix and documentary-ish? No. Wine and climate change? No. Okay. We'll get there. We'll come back to it.
Cocaine and Climate Change.
Thank you, God. Somebody's thinking.
Is that the film that you guys are going to make?
Cocaine and Climate Change is definitely our film.
Probably a story there.
I think cocaine is actually, like, of all the black market drugs, it's actually the worst.
It's definitely the worst. You know, like,
they, like, purify it with gasoline.
Ketamine and climate change might be our one. Okay,
I knew we would get to this at some point.
We were definitely going to go down a K-hole at some point together. So, outside of looking at the documentaries, it's also very, very, very pressing to reduce your meat consumption. And what all of these incredible exposés on the problems that are systematically degrading our earth and threatening our civilization come back down to are these, you know, these like simple steps in these core massive, massive businesses, like, hey, let's use less gas. Hey, let's eat less meat. Maybe let's fly less places. Carbon offsets are something that we looked at with Cloverly on episode 31, I think it was. And while I'm a big proponent of utilizing offsets, I'm a much bigger proponent of shifting behavior and just doing less. So I love the fact that you hit on less meat. And I also have noticed that in a number of conversations with people who are former White House administration, you know, Obama folks, that the shift in the political dialogue is now a lot heavier towards environment. And as important as healthcare is, I would like to encourage everybody to talk to their senators about supporting initiatives that are global like this. And so whether it's the $300 billion and this is the African solution, or it's, you know, planting a trillion trees, whatever the case may be, while I understand that those are not the silver bullets, helping to lever our, you know, democracy and our great engine to actually fix this. I read a stat that, you know, like the $300 billion that gives us 15, 20 years is less than half of our annual military budget. And it just broke my fucking heart. I was like, are you kidding me?
Well, that's really the importance of really electing good congressmen and good senators, because at the end of the day, they're the ones who are going to be allocating the right money towards things like the military budget, or even placing caps on some of these larger corporations who are doing things like offshore drilling.
I'm saying. So this has been a really, really interesting look inside the larger systemic problems that we have and some of the organizations who are combating it and who you can help and who you can follow. Everyone should take a look at the UN Sustainability Development Goals. And I think that if there was one other thing that I would, you know, recommend and look into, there is not just the idea of less meat. I think we don't put enough focus on animal products as a whole. You know, like, we kind of stigmatize just eating meat and protein. But I just had to do this on a diet basis. There's fucking cheese in everything.
Yeah, there is.
It's incredible. There's cheese or dairy, basically, in everything.
Yeah, and I think cheese is like, it's right below beef, you know, it's like, it's, you know,
it's right there.
There's less of an impact with, you know, with pork or poultry.
Or chicken.
Yeah,
or, right.
Yeah.
But look at dairy, look at your dairy consumption, and try and scale that back. Are there any other recommendations that you would throw out?
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is always so tough. I mean, you know, clearly if this was easier, we would have all figured this out. But I think it's just worth noting how much the impact is for animal agriculture. It's not that everyone has to, I mean, everyone's not going to go vegan tomorrow. It's not going to happen. So, but I think it's just worth noting that when we think about this big problem, and also Project Drawdown is a great place to look for what you can do and what different sectors we can hit. I mean, even in, you know, but yes, so if you realize that this is, you know, 14 to 50%, how, depending on how you want to count it, of all emissions, that makes a big impact, right? Even I saw in the New York Times this weekend, there was an article about fashion.
Give another shout out to Project Drawdown. They're good. Tell us a little bit.
Well, yeah. There's a number of, I mean, Project Drawdown, Paul Hawken and his crew have come up with a number. I think it's the top 100, mm-hmm. but it tells you how what we need to, like, you know, what the what a certain area contributes, or actually no, it's all, I think it's all solution based, right?
Yes.
Like what solutions can, how much energy they can generate, or you know, how much they can and how much they cost, right?
Right.
And I think somewhere in there is the idea of how much these different sectors produce, right? But I mentioned, you know, we mentioned animal agriculture, but this, no, this, even this weekend, you know, I read this article about how the fashion industry, you know, 8% of
we're touching on everything, which
is
going
to, which is going to double by 2030. But you know, we can choose to, you know, we can, yeah, we can vote with our feet. We can vote with our pocketbook. These, sometimes these individual actions don't seem enough, and they're not, right? If this is all you're doing, it's not enough. But if you're doing this as a way to show solidarity, and as you said, yeah, we're pressuring our leaders, and we're marching every Friday, and you know, look, sometimes we're going to feel positive about this, and we're going to feel good, and other times we're going to feel, I think, you know, hopeless and pessimistic, and we're probably going to oscillate between those. I know I do. It's a constant fight and argument that I have within myself all the time. But I mean, I think that all of these things, you know, there is a difference. I think some actions do matter more than others. You know, I think everyone has to kind of do their own independent research and figure out what, you know, what they can do, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of the classic list, you know, pressure your leaders, demand, you know, I mean, try to
demand change.
No, but you know, it's all of that.
That's the last one we're leaving you with, folks.
Demand. No, but you know, God, it's, you know, it's, I'm not in a particularly, you know, kind of spirited mood here. I don't know if it's just Tuesday at 7 p.m. You know, so I'm not, you know, and we're sitting here kind of in a coffee shop. You know,
you're doing it. Demand change, people.
No, but this is kind of, you know, it's a tough. It's tough. I don't know. I don't have the answers. I'm very aware of my own shortcomings in this, and yeah, it's kind of one of those arguments or conversations that I have.
I thought I was going to be able to take us out without dying. It's not true.
No.
Nope. Oh fuck.
But do look into those industries for sure. And obviously, if you're a homeowner and if you have the ability to buy a car and you can look into electric and solar, that's amazing too. And if you have the ability to have amazing investments.
We're hitting on all of them.
No, divest where you can, divest. And if you have the privilege to have a certain amount of equity, you know, invest in green energy.
Definitely
and positive,
check out, you know, Age of Consequences, yeah. Though. iTunes, it's fucking awesome. The man does not promote himself enough. Also, take a look at The Great Green Wall. It should be out on iTunes soon. And thank you, Jared Scott, for coming and telling us a little bit about how you're fucking out there making a better world. We appreciate you, my guy.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Brendan, this is one of the best podcasts we've ever done. I'm not going to lie to you.
I think so.
I've really enjoyed
it. It's very generous.
It's very generous. Thanks for joining us in Better World. Come back and learn more about how you can make a better world.
Peace, y'all.